Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with J.J. Cooper, I'm John Manuel. We haven't done this in a while, J.J. and I together, and now we had to go all the way to 3,000 miles to do one, J.J. We couldn't do one on the podcast note.
Could we fit a better place to do it? I mean,
it just needs to be a visual podcast with the a video with a little with a view of the bay and some naval porn for you to describe and enjoy for our
readers. The Ticonderoga class and an Arleigh Burke class destroyer. Cruiser and destroyer this morning. I went on a run, saw two aircraft carriers. I'm happy.
That's and unfortunately, we don't have time to go tour one of the Midway.
I'm going to find time to tour the Midway.
You're here for a whole other day. JJ's got the fever, so JJ will be here through the Rule 5 draft. We will talk a little Rule 5 draft in this podcast, but we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on so far here in the winter meetings here in San Diego. And an active day. JJ, you and I were not trolling the lobby super late at night last night because you flew in yesterday. I've already had three speeches in 2 days here in San Diego, which has been fun so far. But an active night last night. And I guess the main question from the takeaway from day one is we're trying to figure out what the Oakland Athletics are up to. And clearly the Oakland Athletics have one of the most stable front offices in baseball. Billy Beane's been the GM since 1995, I believe. So he's the longest tenured general manager in the game, I believe, over Brian Sabin. And those are the top two guys. You've got a lot of front office lieutenants there who've been there a long time now, whether it's Eric Kubota, one of the longest serving scouting directors in the game. Billy Owens has been there for years and years and years, now 15, 16 years in the organization. These kind of decision makers, a lot of those guys in that front office, and they've had some offseason shakeup. They've lost some talent, but clearly the A's believe in what they're doing. They believe in their evaluations and their evaluators, and they're moving forward. But between the Josh Donaldson trade, then that was a couple weeks ago, the Blue Jays, Monday they trade Brandon Moss for Joe Wendell to the Indians. I think you and I both were surprised at the low return they got for Brandon Moss. And then at night, the big rim rocker that's made official this morning. Six-player deal where they trade two of the seminal, well, Jeff Samardzija is not a seminal player. The seminal A of the last 6 years in some ways was Michael Wenoa for some of us. This is like the $4.25 million sign in 2007, back when that kind of thing wasn't cool internationally, for four players from the Chicago White Sox, including Marcus Semien, an East Bay native, Berkeley native, Josh Fegley, so he is a right-hand hitting catcher, which the A's did not already have one of those, and Derek Norris. And then Chris Bassett, right-hand pitcher, Rangel Ravelo. Rangel Ravelo was the highest rated of those four prospects. Well,
Semien was the highest rated.
Semien and Fegley were not even prospect eligible this year. Ravelo was number 10 prospect. Bassett was actually going to be number 11. I just was writing that up yesterday. So kind of easy to write that up for Trade Central. But all that introduction, JJ, what do you think the A's are doing? Have you figured out what the A's plan is?
I have not. And I've been asking people smarter than me in the game. And to be honest, I've gotten a couple of guys who say they don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. Now, you could let's back it up all the way to the start. The Josh Donaldson trade. Me and you were talking about this last night. The part that I understand in some ways, the part that makes sense about that is they got four players back.
Right.
So they got two
one
back.
One for four. I mean, it's usually a pretty good deal if you can do one for four, as long as there's some quality in the four.
Right, but at the same time, you'd rather have the best player. If you end up with the best player in the trade, usually you end up winning the trade.
I agree.
Well, in this case, they got two potentially back into the rotation, or in the case of Graveman could be a useful reliever type arm. You know that.
Yes.
They got those. They got Franklin Barreto, an extremely interesting, but a long way away, middle of the diamond, middle infielder prospect. You can say he's a shortstop. There's some differing evaluations about whether it's a shortstop, whether it's second base, maybe he ends up in center.
Right.
But he's going to play somewhere in the middle of the diamond with a very good bat. But again, has yet to play really full season ball. So you got to temper that a little bit in that long way away.
I agree.
But the part that puzzles me is, and we talked about this, and then they trade away Donaldson and they get back a replacement for him in Brett Laurie.
Yep.
But the thing with that is that if Brett Laurie ends up being, like, the hope you have, if you're an A's fan, is, you know what? We just sold Josh Donaldson at his peak, and we could hopefully get a guy who, if he stays healthy, if he takes a step forward, he could be Josh Donaldson-like.
That's his upside. His upside is less defensive, less good defense Josh Donaldson,
right,
to me.
Well, the problem with that is that, okay, for this year, he's going to be significantly less expensive because, you know, he has, he's going to be roughly the same amount of cost.
Right.
Not much different. But they're both going to be arbitration eligible at the end of next season.
They're both about to get expensive.
And the thing about it is if Brett Laurie, how arbitration works, if Brett Laurie has a great season this year,
if he becomes a player you hope he becomes,
he's not going to be that much cheaper than Josh Donaldson.
I agree.
And that's the part I don't understand on that. Okay. So that's that trade. Then we go to Brandon Moss for Joe Wendell. If you like Joe Wendell, and I've talked to guys who like Joe Wendell.
I like Joe Wendell.
But he is, what? Okay, you like Joe Wendell. What do you think an upside, but like a best-case scenario Joe Wendell is?
Slightly more offensively successful Eric Sogard, just to put it in an A's context. I think he's a better hitter than Eric Sogard by a full grade, maybe two grades. If Eric Sogard's a 30 hitter, which he had like a 560 ops this year, so maybe he's a 30 hitter. That's, to me, Joe Wendell's very similar. Honestly, I think that my mind works in mysterious ways, JJ. I've always associated Joe Wendell with Joe Sclafani. They were both in the Coastal Plain League at the same time. They're both Northeast guys. Wendell was a D2 guy. Sclafani was an Ivy League guy on a very good Dartmouth team. I'm all about some Joe Sclafani. I think they're the same kind of player, and I think Joe Wendell is maybe a little bit better defender at second base. But he had 250 last year. I know he had a Hammond injury. He had 250. He does draw some walks. He had some back control.
He had a very good Carolina League year the year before that.
Right. So I think Joe Wendell can be a second division type regular. Maybe he's the 15th best second baseman in the major leagues at his peak. Do I think he's a frontline player? I don't think they think he's a frontline player, but do I think he's a everyday regular second base? Maybe, but that's no sure thing. And Brandon Moss has big left-handed power. I mean, I understand there's a issue with his hip and his postseason hip.
But the thing about the hip, though, is hip labrum injuries are something that we have a long track record with, and usually they are not a long-term issue.
Yeah, so I was surprised that that was all they got. I was surprised that that's all they got for Brandon Moss. And I wonder, you know, this is one of the things I wanted to ask last night to front office people, but I ran out of gas. You know, did you see, is that the kind of trade where you go, well, damn, I wish they'd asked us? You know, I think that was the kind of trade where other teams were like, well, damn, I wish they'd asked me, you know?
And then we have the trade that just happened, the Samardzija deal. And there's no real other way for me when I start the evaluation. And I think if you're the A's, you would start by saying, yes, that was a trade to try to win it last year, and it didn't work out. We lost. You know, we had the wild card game in our hands, and we lost it.
And that is a very expensive failure. And it's not because they didn't make the postseason deeper. It's because you gave up Addison Russell.
Now, let me ask it. Admittedly, it was a Jeff Samardzija, Jason Hamill, who they've also, Jason Hamill left this week.
Back to Chicago.
Which, by the way, for the Cubs, that deal looks so awesome, let's not even start. But, okay, sure. If you're the A's, though, let's rank the four guys they got now, Addison Russell and Billy McKinney. Addison Russell's the top guy of that group.
You're talking about
the four guys that came in this trade today.
If the A's had them, you mean?
No, I'm saying the four guys that they got back compared to the two that they traded away. Addison Russell, I would rather have, it's not even close.
But it's not close.
To anyone else.
Okay. I'm wondering if I'd rather have Simeon or McKinney.
The point I was going to make is that.
Tough call.
Those are, I think, roughly, like Simeon plays a more premium position because he's a middle of the diamond guy. At the same time, McKinney, you know, probably has a little bit better, you know, bat potential. I mean, that's what McKinney is.
Yeah, he's a hitter. You know, the thing is, Billy McKinney really fits the Cubs because they need a patient hitter. They need a guy who grinds at bats, will draw some walks. I could see Billy McKinney.
Javier Baez is not going to fill that role.
I could see Billy McKinney being the Cubs' leadoff guy when it's all said and done. Like, I think that as they plan things out, they're thinking that's more of like a Mendy, you know, Arizmendi Alcantara kind of deal, but he's an extremely aggressive hitter. I could see Billy McKinney being like a non-profile left fielder, but being a left fielder who leads off and draws a lot of walks and sets the table for all those big boppers behind him.
And so the point, though, is that the best player in this by far is Addison Russell.
The second best might be the other guy they gave up.
The second best may be the other guy they gave up in that trade.
I like Marcus Semien, but Marcus Semien as your everyday shortstop. This is from the club that brought you Jed Lowrie as your everyday shortstop, and I like Jed Lowrie. But most evaluators consider him a below average shortstop. The metrics consider him a below average shortstop defensively. I don't think Marcus Semien is any better defensively than Jed Lowrie. I think he's a very similar player.
I think if you put him at second, but he could be a...
Or third.
But the problem there is that, okay, if you've got a third baseman, you just got him against Brett Lowrie.
Well, they got him to play shortstop because now their shortstops are Nick Punto and Andy Perino. So Marcus Semien was valued by the Athletics to be an offensive shortstop. And that's fine. I think that he can be that. But that said, Marcus Semien walked a ton in the minor leagues. His strikeout to walk ratio in the big leagues is like 6-1. Like in 2014, it was like 22-90. When he first got his feet wet in September of 2013, it was like 22-1. So he's had this extreme plate discipline in the minor leagues where I believe he walked 84 and struck out 66 one year. And that has evaporated in his big league time.
And sometimes...
Small sample, but
sometimes
it's evaporated.
Sometimes it comes back.
Right.
But sometimes it's an approach issue where the problem is that you do not do enough.
That's right.
For when pitchers... When walks stop being... In the minors, walks often are a failure to execute on the pitcher's part.
That's right.
In the big leagues, walks are more of an approach.
Like, I can't believe the thought that popped in my head is when walks stop being polite and start getting real. The real world. When you're the real world, Oakland.
But, okay. The other guys they got in this, Josh Begley, again, you know.
He's their fourth catcher. I'm doing a little roster construction as we're talking about this. So they're clearly not done. Mm-hmm. They're clearly, as Boogie Down Production said, we're not done. Jaso, Norris, Vogt, Fegley, that's four catchers on their 40-man roster. So, you know, Derek Norris, I like Derek Norris, but in this, it was the very rare confluence of the things that a lot of baseball people always fear when they profile guys. Derek Norris's throwing arm is below average.
They sat home through the rest of the playoffs in part because they had to play Derek Norris against the Royals.
That's exactly right. That was like one of the few teams that could completely exploit.
If not for a puzzling double steal in the first inning, where Billy Butler is trying to get things started. If not for that, which forced an injury, which brings Derek Norris into the game, I think there's a very high likelihood the A's would have kept playing.
That's a great point. That's a great point. I'm sure that's one of the small posts in some of these long Royal stories that have been written. But so Fegley's like a factor in a platoon, I think, is what he is.
But Fegley, I mean, Fegley, and that's what Fegley at best is that Fegley is not a guy who you probably look at as an everyday catcher.
Correct, because if you did, I think the White Sox would have had him up last year. Because they've had a giant sucking sound at catcher the last 2 years. No offense to anybody personally, but they just haven't gotten production behind the plate. Then at first base, Ravelo is in that mix now. And I like Ranger Ravelo.
We're the high man on Ranger Ravelo. We like him.
We do.
But is this an everyday guy?
I can tell you that he was not one of the White Sox. If the White Sox organization was lining up its own top 10 prospects, he would not have been in it. We were higher on him than they are.
Because he can hit.
He can hit. It's really a matter of do you believe in the power coming on or not.
Well, but the other thing with that is that it's also something where you can say, it's you believe in the power's coming on, or do you say, we're not worried about the profile. We're looking at what he can do.
There is that angle as well. And I like that angle. I like that as a team. I like just sitting next to Dayton Moore yesterday at the giving him the Organization of the Year award. You know, one of the things that stands out about Dayton, he just said it in a simple phrase, I like players. I like scouts and front office people who like players and look at players through that lens. What can he do? You got to have
don't
someone.
Don't just discount everyone as he can't do this.
Right, you got to have someone in the room who tells you what he can't do, but you got to have someone who believes in what he can do. Ranger Ravelo can hit. He has feel to hit. I think that he's the kind of player.
He gets on base.
Right, and I think his on base skills will translate in the big leagues more than Simeon's. So I do like Ranger Ravelo. That said, they have for this year in the big leagues, that's Ike Davis, Nate Freiman platoon more than likely. Also on their 40-man roster is Shane Peterson. Then you have Ravelo, who's just finished Double-A, and then you have Renato Nunez, who's in High-A this year, a third baseman. But I think most scouts think he's going to move across to first base. And then you have Matt Olson too. So,
but again,
I like that, maybe they're going to
those problems. I heard, like from the standpoint. Let's back up for a second and make one point, which is that the A's farm system, after the Addison Russell Billy McKinney trade, was a pretty barren farm system.
I liked Stockton's team. I do like Daniel Robertson, I do like Matt Olson. I like Renato Nunez. I like some of those off the bat.
They have significantly improved their farm system.
They have.
But at the same time, it's a quantity more than... And that's not disparaging these guys, but it's quantity over quality in that there's not a guy who...
Barreto's the highest impact guy. Barreto's the top hunter guy.
Let me ask you this. Top hunter's a long ways away. What top hunter guys have they acquired?
Barreto. He's the only one. I think he's for sure a top hunter guy. I like Franklin Barreto.
I think he's a top hunter guy too. I agree. I think that's the only one.
And in a big picture, 35,000 foot takeaway for me, I would say that what the A's are doing is in line in some ways with what we've seen the Cubs do and some other clubs, whereas I would say 2 years ago, the number one currency in trades was young power arms. That's what you always did. Mm-hmm. You didn't make a trade unless you got a young power arm. And even the A's used to be in that. A.J. Cole, those trades where they made with the Nationals. When you got a trade, you always had to throw in a Class A power arm. And when I first saw the Donaldson trade, I was like, where's the power arm? There's no power arm here. And this trade, Chris Bassett's a good arm. He's like a better version of Graveman or Nolan.
They went to closer to the big league.
So there's that. First, there's the big league ready talent. That is definitely one trend. And the other trend is the athletic infielder who can hit. And that is what they got in Franklin Barreto. So
let me ask
that's the way they've
though.
Gone. I still think they could use a power arm, but when you make trades of this magnitude.
The other thing in that trade that gets forgotten is they traded away Dan Straley last year.
Right. Yeah.
Dan Straley versus... these guys.
I don't think he's as good as these guys. To be honest with you, I think Dan Straley's like... I think Kendall Graveman, his floor is like Dan Straley. I like Graveman and Nolan better than a Dan Straley. I think Dan Straley and A.J. Griffin, and I love A.J., were a little smoke and mirrors that couple of years ago. And they do get A.J. Griffin back from Tommy John this year. They do have, I think, fairly impressive pitching depth. When you look at their starting pitchers on their 40-man roster, Drew Pomerantz, Jared Parker coming back from Tommy John, Nolan... Arnold Leone's coming back from Tommy John. Scott Kazmir, Griffin, Gray, obviously Sonny Gray's the frontline guy that's left here. Graveman, Jesse Chavez, if you think of him as a starter. Chris Bassett, if you think of him as a starter. But it is more quantity.
It's a whole lot of if you love him threes, if you don't like him as much fours, if you don't like him as much fives. Right.
But the guys that, you know, this year... In the 2.5 year run, Oakland really had 12, 13, and the first half of 14. The guys you really identify with this team, guys who turned them around in a lot of ways, were guys like Moss, Cespedes, Donaldson,
All-Star,
and Sonny Gray.
Again, All Star's not.
And Sonny Gray's the only one who's left.
All Star in some ways, like, I mean, it doesn't mean everything, but there are a whole lot of All Stars they traded away.
Yeah, they did. So. What do you think this does? Yesterday did for the White Sox, JJ. The White Sox, I would not want to face them. If they make the playoffs, I would not want to face Sale, Samardzija back to back. No, thank you.
And then you added they also signed David Robertson last night,
which was a gaping hole at the back of their bullpen.
Back of their bullpen. Filled. And I also think, I think it's something that hurt them, not at a massive level, but Nate Jones getting hurt last year.
It did hurt them.
If they get him back healthy this year. And all of a sudden, you move guys into smaller roles. The other thing I thought that was not really mentioned with that last night is that reduces some pressure. We both thought that there was a chance that they were going to come out of spring training with Carlos Rodon blowing gas in the back end of their bullpen.
That is correct.
Now this gives them kind of more reason to kind of wait and let him develop as a starter to kind of come up later in the year as a starter. But no, I think if you look at the White Sox in... what is turning out to be a fascinating AL Central.
It is. You know, the other guy, the White Sox, besides Nate Jones, they're looking forward to Matt Lindstrom coming back. I know that doesn't sound like a big deal, but it is to them.
But it is.
He was great for them in 2013.
For one thing also, you need numbers
you
in
do.
The pen. And they lacked numbers last year. But you look at them and you say, no, this... I mean, obviously, the key thing is they got Jeff Samardzija, and they did not give up a guy who they cannot replace... with very little pain.
I mean, Marcus Semien, for them, they saw as a as an extra guy. They saw him as a utility guy.
Even if he's a utility guy?
And they have guys. They have Carlos Sanchez right there ready for that. Micah Johnson ready for second.
And he wasn't going to play shortstop for them because they have a better shortstop.
That's right. So Micah Johnson will be their second baseman, I can almost guarantee you, in 2015. I don't know if he's ready or not. You know, he's finishing classes this fall in Indiana.
And he needs to get healthy, because that was really what hurt him last
it
year.
It was a hamstring tweak.
For a speed guy, is, you know, if you want to wonder why his stolen bases fell to the floor, you can't run when your hamstrings hurt.
That's it. So,
and he's a guy, if he can't run, his batting average is going to suffer, too, because that's where he gets part of his, you know.
The American League Central, though, really, outside of the Twins, hey, you know, Torrey Hunter went there, and he said he went there to win, and it's like, wow, okay.
But the Twins are, though, they're interesting, not in a 2015 standpoint, but they 2016 for them can't go as wrong as 2015 did from the standpoint of Snow and Buxton.
One would hope. Let's hope. I mean, like, the industry wants to see a healthy Byron Buxton. But, I mean, obviously Kansas City, is not – they haven't made a big move this offseason. Really, all they've done is they've lost Billy Butler, and they seem primed to lose James Shields.
And they seem primed to lose Nori Aoki, which isn't a giant. But they have holes. They need they got to – but they did actually bring back Luke Kochaver, which
– Right.
Again, I think I tweeted this, but they're going to make some kind of move because they have more holes than they can fill really in free agency. And – as much as having a great bullpen is great, having a bullpen that goes Jason Fraser in the fifth, Luke Kochaver in the sixth, Kelvin Herrera in the seventh, Wade Davis in the eighth, Greg Holland in the ninth might be a little bit of overkill. Like, you could trade Holland or Davis.
You do have Andy McCullough tweeting this morning that multiple rival executives told him last night the Royals were telling teams that Holland, Davis, Herrera were not available. Do you buy that or not?
Again, I don't, from the standpoint of they could do a different approach because they need right now. They don't have a fifth star. If you lose Shields, Yordano moves up, you know, to be their new number one. You know, you move everyone up, but they don't have. I mean, that's probably Brian Flynn if the season started right now.
So that was their other big move.
But if that's the case, well, then the other approach you can do is you say, okay, Brian, give us four, give us a good four. If you can give us five, we'll have a party tonight. But and then we're just going to turn it over to the pen.
Right.
Now they can do it. It would be a fascinating approach. It would be the Will Lingo approach gets closer and closer.
That's right. By the way, the news as we're recording is Francisco Liriano signing back with the Pirates for $13 million a year over 3 years.
I like what the Pirates are doing. I mean, they brought back Burnett and Liriano, and again, the thing about it is they brought up a lot of guys. But they still have Glasnow and Tyone, who are not that far away. That's a good situation. And again,
right, I agree.
The Centrals are
both Central divisions are really, really interesting. I'm pretty fascinated. JJ, what move? I mean, I think a lot of people here are talking about John Lester. That sounds like that's the big shoe to drop. That also involves potentially a Central team with the Cubs possibly being in there. What are you looking forward to the rest of the week here in San Diego? I mean, like, what's
We'll probably have to
non-rule
do a second. We'll have to do a second Rule 5 podcast, and maybe another one. I'll probably do one after the Rule 5 also. But no.
We might just have to do a hangout for that one. That might be more fun to do as a hangout.
Yeah, but
I'll be back in Raleigh.
I'm worried about the internet connection on that. Like, because I don't want a 2013 draft redo.
That's true.
The worst Google
hangout
of all time.
But that makes me laugh really hard.
Connor, we love you, Connor.
That was so good.
It's an inside joke. This is not great podcasting.
It was basically Connor Glassy pulling a Beano Cook. Tell him I can hear him. Tell him. It was awesome.
It was. But, I want to see. I figure there's going to be some other trades that are going to come down. I don't know where they're going to be, but I don't think we're in any way done for this, for this week when it comes to trades. Free agent moves are going to happen, but then there comes the question.
We got no hint at Lucky's this morning from Omar Minaya what the Padres were up to. But it does sound like there's a lot of scuttlebutt about the Padres making some deal. Maybe
Cole Hamels at some point. It may not be while we're here, but Cole Hamels at some point, he's the only tradable asset that the Phillies have.
I can report that that the Andrew Kashner giant poster on the side of Petco Park has been undisturbed. There was no workman out there getting ready to take Andrew Kashner. Tell him! It was awesome.
It was... But, I want to see, I figure there's going to be some other trades that are going to come down. I don't know where they're going to be, but